This is episode 71 of the Next Year Now podcast.
Hi, I'm Amy Edmondson, Harvard Business and Leadership Professor, author of The Fearless Organization, Creating Psychological Safety in the Workplace for Learning, Innovation, and Growth. If you want to create a life that is full of meaning, purpose, and that is fearless, then you need to start listening to the Next Year Now podcast with my friend Tom Hefner.
When you look at it, people aren't committed to jobs. They're not committed to companies. What drives commitment more than anything else is people are committed to people.
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion, but we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business, and entrepreneurship. There's never been a more abundant and prosperous time to be alive. There's no shortage of technologies and solutions to help you and your business to succeed. But what separates the top performers, those of us at the very top of the pyramid, is leadership. If you can lead effectively, then you can do anything. Today's guest, Ty Bennett, is an accomplished author, speaker, and entrepreneur. And he's going to share his unique take on leadership. In our conversation, Ty and I will discuss what drove him to start a business with his brother at only 21 years of age, and one that became a $20 million a year business just a few years later. How partnership is the new leadership, the most effective habits we can cultivate to build a connected and cohesive team, book recommendations to level up your leadership skills, and so much more. When Ty Bennett was just 21 years old, he and his brother started a business in direct sales, and they built that thing up to $20 million in annual revenue while still in their 20s. Now, since then, he's developed leaders all over the world. I'm talking 37 countries through keynote speeches, coaching programs, all focused on sales and leadership. As a young entrepreneur, Ty went on to found Leadership Incorporated. It's a speaking and training company with a mission to empower individuals, organizations, to challenge their status quo, to cultivate exceptional relationships. Think about that for a moment. Organizations that are cultivating exceptional relationships. I want to be part of that. Do you? And finally, to compete in extraordinary ways. Through his best-selling book, Partnership is the New Leadership, which we're going to talk about, Ty showcases his, I'll say, innate understanding of business leadership by stressing the importance of creating leaders, not followers. And in his corresponding keynote, Ty shares actionable tips for leaders to cultivate trust, to encourage collaboration, to deliver value, inspire ideas and insights, and fuel commitment amongst team members to do more, to reach higher, and to develop their own leadership skills. This podcast is all about actionable tips, right? Habits and practices. So we're going to talk about that as well. Ty, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is fun.
You know, in just a moment, we're going to dive deep on all things leadership with Ty. That's why I'm here, and I know that's why you're here too. But before we do, let's get to know Ty a little bit more. Ty, I started my business at 37, and I think at the time I thought, you know what, like, I'm a little bit of an anomaly. I'm starting out my business as an older gentleman, right? And as it turns out, I found out that a lot of people start their first business at an older age. So, you know, share if you would why you decided to start a business at the ripe old age of 21 with your brother.
You know, I think about that. There's probably pros and cons of both, right? You know, you probably had more experience and brought more to the table from that standpoint. But I think there was a value in the fact that my brother and I probably had less to unlearn. You know, we were just we were able to just kind of jump in and learn as we went. So I was always very entrepreneurial. I actually went to school to study entrepreneurship, and I knew I wanted to own my own business. I knew that I wanted to go and create something. Mm-hmm. I just had that drive in me. I loved working with people, so I was intrigued with that. It was actually my brother's idea, our original business, that he brought to the table. And so, you know, it just kind of came together, and it seemed like a good idea. And we're a place where we could start to do it on the side as we were going to school, and it morphed and became a successful business. So it's just kind of how it worked out.
My mom likes to share the story that when I was 5 years old, I would go around the neighborhood. I would pick people's flowers, and then I would knock on their door and then sell them their flowers back.
Nice.
So what was a story like that? Because if you're an entrepreneur, I gotta believe you had a story like that when you were a kid, where you were.
Sure. Yeah. My mom would tell us the same kind of story, but I would take their rocks and we'd like paint them and then sell them back to them. you know, I think for me, early from age 8 years old to 12 years old, we had a paper route that we did. And this was, you know, 150 papers. I grew up in Denver, so this is the Rocky Mountain News. Every morning at 5 a.m., 365 days a year, rain or snow, it didn't matter. And that business taught me two things in particular. One, it taught me how to work, right? Because I don't think there was a single day that we were that excited to wake up at 5 in the morning and go deliver papers. But two, it also taught me that I liked doing something and making money. Like as an 8 year old, making $400 a month was like unbelievable, you know? And so that was intriguing to me. Just the concept of building something and creating something. And then in high school, I started a business with a friend of ours, kind of a mentor, who he was a wholesaler he would sell sporting goods primarily to stores, and he would buy out all the samples from the lines that he repped, and we would take those and sell those in sample sales like garage sales, but you know, high end stuff that was all new. And we would do that throughout high school, and he'd pay me 20% commission, and we'd set up and build these garage sales over a weekend and make great money and love doing it. So yeah, I just kind of had that entrepreneurial drive in me.
That seems like a smarter idea than when I was in middle school and I was buying wholesale candy from Costco. Well, it wasn't Costco, it was Sam's Club. Selling that. Not much profit margin on that when you're...
No, we did that at a couple camps, right? You show up with like an extra suitcase full of stuff and then you basically eat your way through most of that suitcase. But yeah, that's fun stuff.
Well, what did you learn from that experience of starting a business with your brother about leadership? Like, what did that experience teach you?
Well, quite a bit. I think for anybody starting a business, it pushes you. It causes you to dig in and find some resolve. And for me, I learned a lot about influence. I learned a lot about how to communicate. I learned a lot about how to get people to listen, to pay attention, and to follow. You know, we were 21 and 22, and so as we started to grow our business and started to grow our sales team, trying to figure out how to lead, mostly everybody who worked for us and with us were way older than I was, had more experience. And so learning quickly and realizing how much I needed to learn. So I became a huge student of, I wish podcasts existed back then, right?
But yeah.
You know, I would listen to books on tape and audio programs, and I would read like crazy and study great people. And we had some great mentors that would coach us through some things, and I could go and pick their brains, you know, when I needed to. But I also think that, you know, some mentors that I didn't know at the time, I've actually had a chance to get to know, you know, were some of the leadership gurus, right? John Maxwell and Stephen Covey and Jack Canfield, and all of which have become friends. I mean, Stephen Covey's passed away, but they became mentors of mine as I, you know, at some point got to know them and learning from their wisdom and their books and their programs. And that was fundamental for me.
Well then, okay, so taking those things that you learned back then about leadership and then kind of fast forwarding to where you are now, what kind of caused you to say, okay, we have this successful business, but now I want to build a business, a company around leadership?
it was more of a passion for me. I loved the thing I fell in love with our business as it morphed. I mean, it got to a point, right, where it was successful. We were growing. We had a good sales team and it was moving forward. And my role more and more became in speaking and training and kind of the leadership development side. I think partially because I had some talent in that arena and mostly because I was really passionate about it. And so it just became kind of this natural offshoot for me to say, you know what, I want to do more with this. And I want to go and speak to other companies. And as dumb as it may sound, at 28 years old, I wanted to write a book. And that's morphed into 4 books that I've written. But you know, it was just something that I felt like I wanted to pursue because I was really passionate about it. It makes me come alive and I enjoy it more than anything else.
Well, let's pivot to your book. Partnership is the new leadership. Say more about what that means when you say partnership is the new leadership.
Yeah, it's, you know, where it came from, I did a survey of 5,000 leaders. And I asked them, I don't know if it's a survey, I only asked one question, but I asked these leaders from multiple different industries, what do you want from your people? Right? You think about the people that work for you, Tom, the people that you work with, what do you want from them? And 76% of the people came back and said what they want is commitment. Mm. Right? That's what we want. We want people to show up, we want them to be engaged, to give their best. We want them to be committed. But the leadership takeaway for me was when you look at it, people aren't committed to jobs. They're not committed to companies. What drives commitment more than anything else is people are committed to people. And so I believe that how we show up as a leader directly impacts how our people show up for us. And the old adage that leadership is based on title, position, and authority just doesn't work in today's world. I think our world has changed. And I think if we want our people to show up in a different way, we have to partner with them. And when I say that, I don't mean that you're losing delineating roles or organizational charts or anything like that. I just mean that you partner with your people in subtle and specific ways. It's about the relationship you build with them. It's about giving them a voice. It's about jumping in the trenches with them. I mean, though the kind of leaders who jump in and are partners with their people know them, they like them, they trust them, they see the value that they bring. Those leaders have people who show up consistently and with commitment every single day.
A while back, I had the pleasure of speaking with Amy Edmondson on the podcast, and we talked a little bit about this. She talked about it through, I'll say, a different thread, which is this thread around psychological safety. So
yeah,
she was saying like having her whole expertise is around teaming, and she's written lots of books about it and done TED Talks, and she teaches courses at Harvard. And so her whole thing is, or one of the big things in her research is psychological safety. And I've always thought that like, to be able to develop psychological safety on teams, you need to be really connected as a team. So what
for
you're
sure.
saying is resonating with me, you know, strongly. But let me get your perspective on it, because I believe this, but you're somebody who's in this arena, you're in this world of leadership. Why is it so important then for us to be connected?
Well, I completely agree. You know, Simon Sinek in his book, Leaders Eat Last, kind of touches on this idea as well. You think about just human nature. If I don't feel like you have my back, if I don't feel safe around you, I'm not going to be as vulnerable. I'm not going to be as authentic. I, in many cases, may not be truthful. I'm probably going to, like, if a leader is the kind of leader who reprimands and flies off the handle when mistakes are made, then very quickly, those people are not going to bring up when mistakes are made. They're going to start to hide those things, right? There's no safety in that situation. And so connection, I think, is huge. One of the things I talk to leaders about is I think often the old mantra of leadership is that it's about perfection, right? We have to show up and we have to deliver the perfect approach. We have to show people the perfect example of how to be. And the truth is we're just human. We just can't. I think we have to shift our goal from perfection to connection. Because when we connect, people can overlook imperfections. They know that they're there. None of us are going to lead in a way that everybody wants to emulate and everybody wants to follow. And so if we can create an environment where our people know that their voice matters, where they know that regardless of what happens, there may be some consequence, but that we're going to be okay and we're going to get through it and we're going to see the good and we're going to seek solutions together. We're a partnership, we're a team. then yeah, I think everybody shows up differently.
Well, and that's where you get your commitment too. I've seen this.
Yeah.
I've seen this go both ways, right? I've been on teams where we had an amazing leader, and everybody would run through a wall for that person.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, I've had, you know, teams where I've been on where somebody was inauthentic, or they didn't have your back, or, and you know, people, they were the first to bail on that team.
Well, it's interesting, but you know, there's an old saying that I think most people have heard, is that people join companies but they leave bosses.
Yeah.
Right? And we throw that around and like as rhetoric, but statistically that actually bears out, right? When you look at why people leave, it's typically because of relationships. They don't feel like they're valued, or they don't like a given situation. And so, yeah, I think that one of the things I want leaders to focus on is what's in your control, right? And I can't fully control whether my people show up and give their absolute best every single day. I can control who I hire. I can control how I treat them. I can control the effort that I put into building a relationship. I can control how I lead. And so if I do those things, the chances are that I'm going to get better response and better engagement. Because when you think about companies in today's world, what differentiates companies, it's really not, we're not in the age anymore of like proprietary technology and products necessarily, right? Some people have a little bit of an edge, but it's a pretty even playing field. And so what differentiates you and I is how well our people show up. It's how engaged they are. It's the kind of service they provide. It's how much production they can achieve, right? And so I need to try and get the very best out of my people every single day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's doubly important because with a lot of the younger millennial generation, and I don't say this in a bad way, but they are much quicker if they are unsatisfied with a relationship with their leadership or with other colleagues, they're much quicker to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to go find a better one. Whereas
yeah,
maybe
for sure.
My father's generation and even a little bit of my generation, people would kind of stay in one place a little bit longer. But now I see people, they demand better, which is good, I think. I never looked at it as a negative. I say, okay, well, they're keeping me as a leader accountable to working hard and to showing my commitment to them. And like you said, building a genuine connection and relationship.
Yeah, it's a good perspective on it. But, you know, I mean, it's a reality of today's world. Statistically, if you graduate from college in the United States this year, averages are that you'll hold almost 30 jobs in your lifetime.
Wow. Is it that many?
Yeah. And when you think about it from that perspective, that's why we can't just take the approach that, you know what, they have a job, they need to be committed to the job. Why? They can go get a job anywhere else anytime, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's going to change. And so, yeah, the loyalty factor, I think, is something that has to be created. And it's created, you know, the millennials as a whole, I think they get lumped together. But culturally, everybody's changing, right? As a new workforce comes into play and new values are created and proposed and lived, everybody kind of shifts in that direction. And so the way that we provide, you know, the psychological safety, this connection with our team, partnership with our people, and allow them to thrive, you know, those things make an impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ty, reflecting maybe on your experience leading teams and creating leadership coaching programs, what are some of the most effective habits and practices we can cultivate to build a more connected and cohesive team?
So I'll give you just a couple of quick thoughts. I mean, these are high level. We could go very in depth on each of them. But, you know, when it comes to building relationships, I often share with leaders that they need to invest in people every day. And when I say investment, I don't mean you have to spend money. I don't mean that you have to do something huge. I think you need to go above and beyond in personal and meaningful ways to show people that you care and that you're there for them. And this can be simple things. It could be remembering somebody's birthday. It could be reaching out without an agenda. It could be talking to them, following up on the things that are important, right? If I'm leaving out for the weekend because my son has a big baseball tournament, and I get back on Monday and you follow up with me on how that went, because that's important in my life, right? That's meaningful. So I think investing in people every single day is a conscious effort where you go above and beyond what's in your job description. I think those investments change relationships. I think that's one thing we can do. I think another thing, I like to remind leaders that people support what they help create. And what I mean by that is, I think as leaders, we have to give our people a voice. They need to feel heard, because the old approach of leadership would be, I tell you what to do, and at the point of implementation, I expect you to be committed. But that's not actually how people operate in today's world. In today's world, I think the commitment happens at the point of creation. And so if you can creatively ask people's opinions and get their feedback and input so that they take some sense of ownership, and I'm not saying that every decision is going to run through every single person on your team, but I am asking, do your people feel like they're heard and that their opinion matters? Because if they don't, they probably won't take the kind of ownership that you want them to, right? And so I think that's an important concept, that people support what they help create. I'll give you one more. I think as leaders, often we focus on motivation, and motivation is important, but it's overrated. If we think of leadership as motivational cheerleading, right? If I am just, you know, say, you know what, Tom, go get them, go run as fast as you can, I'm going to cheer you on. The problem is, if there's a wall in front of you and you hit the wall, I mean, you can't do anything, right? What am I going to do? Cheer right. for you to run faster into the wall next time? Like, my job is to help remove obstacles and inhibitors to allow you to thrive in what you do. And I think we often focus, if you think about it as an equation, on one side you have motivation that drives you towards a goal, on the other side you have obstacles and inhibitors that keep you from achieving that goal. What we often do as leaders is we focus on the motivation side, when where we really need to focus is to clear the runways, to remove the obstacles, the inhibitors, to make our people better, equip them with the skill and the knowledge that they need to succeed. And that's real leadership. But that requires that we get in the trenches, that we get our hands dirty, that we're in it with our people. And that's what I mean by partnership.
And I think there's a, you know, for a lot of people that are not good leaders, part of it is they don't want to take the time. They don't want to take the effort. Like, that's hard. It's not straightforward. It's not easy to go give them an attaboy or to say, yeah, you're doing great. There's an element of, I mean, of easiness to that. When you have to get in there and, like you said, get in the trenches and help remove some of those obstacles or help them kind of climb over those barriers, that's harder. That's not as straightforward. There's an element of uncertainty and ambiguity of how to do that. And I think they either shy away from that or they just don't want to do the work.
Yeah, I think apathy has a lot to do with it. We're just human. So we get lazy and we don't, and we're all busy. Most leaders have a full job to do. And oh, by the way, you're leading the entire team. Right. So there's a lot on your plate and I get that, but leadership requires more of you. But that's the thing. It's worth it. If you put in the kind of effort to lead effectively, what I love about leadership, what gets me so passionate, is leadership is one of the rare places where you get to actually make an impact in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires that you're willing to put in that extra effort to make that impact. And that's what I want to try and inspire leaders to do.
What are some of the big challenges that leaders will face, be it building teams or otherwise, and how might we help them overcome that?
Well, I think there's two things come to mind. Some are personal challenges that leaders are going to face, and some are people challenges, right? I mean, I think as leaders, we're in the people business, and inherent in the people business are people. And, you know, so there's people you're going to not get along with. There's people that are going to be a thorn in your side. There's people that are going to be detrimental to your team. They're going to undermine, like, people are people. It's going to happen, right? It's not going to be all roses. But individually, I think, you know, apathy is one of those things I think we all face. I think ego is a huge one for leaders, that we get in our own way, and we want, it's natural to want to kind of take credit and to be seen for the value that we provide and to be looked up to and to be, you know, and so I think ego kind of can get in our way quite often. Self-interest is another one of those that, you know, I think is a little bit different than ego, but we, as a leader, your mindset has to shift where when things happen, you can no longer naturally think, how does this affect me? Your thought process has to shift to, how does this affect my team? And that's a hard mindset to change.
Ty, before we move on to the last part of the show What else do you want us to know from the book or leadership in general?
I mean, along the lines of what we were just talking about with self-interest, I think, you know, the first book that I wrote is called The Power of Influence. And the basic premise of that book is that influence and leadership, it's not about you. It's about them. And I think that's where we can really start to struggle is when we make it about us. But if you come at it with this kind of servant mindset and how can I place other people's interests first and how can I help them move in that direction, that's the kind of partnership that I'm talking about. It's having that kind of mindset where you're others focused instead of focusing on yourself. And I think that's where it starts from a mindset perspective. And I share that very openly, you know, with audiences for me, because there was some of that learning and shifting that mindset for me was not easy. It wasn't natural. And in many instances, I screwed it up big time and had some people call me on it and kind of wake me up to it. And so I think that's the leaders that can shift that mindset and truly try and serve and partner and grow and add value with their people, those leaders they make a huge impact in people's lives.
I think we all can think about leaders that we've had in our lives that did just that, and it makes
for sure
such a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's time for my favorite part of the show. This is where we talk about one of the best habits we can adopt today, and that is the habit of reading. Ty, I want you, and I think from our conversation so far, you probably have some good books in mind, but I want you to think about the books that you've really enjoyed over the years or books that have impacted you deeply. What are the two or three books that stand out for you?
So hard to narrow down to two or three. So I'm sitting in my home office. I've got books all over my shelves. So I'm just kind of looking around at all these books. So I'll give you a couple of like foundational ones that I think are important.
Mm-hmm.
John Maxwell, I love his stuff. He's written, I don't know, like 75 books or something.
The guy's a powerhouse.
Yeah, that guy is a machine. He has a team, but you know, he's pretty awesome too. His favorite of mine is the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. I think that's a fantastic kind of foundational leadership book by Stephen Covey. Seven Habits, I think, is one of those foundational leadership books. A couple more recent, Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday is a great book. Kind of talking about some of what we were just discussing, you know, and where leaders can get in their own way. Oh, God, there's so many. So those three, I think, you know, if you were to jump into those three, there's so much wisdom in those three books.
Yeah, I've read Stephen Covey's book probably, I don't know, two or three times now. I just keep going back to it. So much gold in there.
It's a classic for sure.
Final question. What are you working on now that you're really excited about?
So two things. I host a podcast as well. And so I love being on doing this. And sometimes I'm on the other side of the mic and I love what you're doing. So I host a podcast called the Relevant Leadership Podcast and have similar discussions to this. So that's exciting. And then I'm writing another book currently that takes kind of the next step of partnership as the new leadership to the mentoring stage of how do you grow leadership on your team. And the working title is Leader of Leaders. We'll see if that's what the title comes out as. But working on writing that right now. And those are kind of the two, you know, projects that are engaging a lot of my energy outside of the speeches and the other things that I do.
Awesome. Well, when the next book is finished, please come back and I'd love to hear
that. Awesome. Let's
do it. Awesome. Well, thanks. Cool. Ty, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your wisdom about leadership. I really dig this subject matter, so I'm taking away a lot of real concrete things that I can do and change in my own life, and I'm sure everyone else is as well.
Yeah, this is fun. Thanks.
You can connect with Ty Bennett online through his website, tybennett.com. That's TYBENNETT.com. And on LinkedIn. All the links and resources Ty and I discussed can be found at the page created just for this episode. You'll find it all at nextyearnowpodcast.com/71. Finally, just a reminder, if you like the show and enjoy learning from our guests each week, please consider giving us a rating and review on iTunes. It helps us stay relevant and findable by listeners like you. That's it for today. I'll see you next time.